extend greetings to you in Jesus' name this morning. Count it a privilege to be here and worship with you all. For a title for the message this morning, it's a one-word title. I'd like to talk about respect. And there is a lack of respect in our society today. And there's also probably a wrong definition of respect, where respect does include tolerance, but just because we are tolerant, there is a thing in society today for the push to be tolerant to the push is so much on tolerance that we lose respect. And I know that's almost sounded like that can't be, but there is a certain amount of hate that can go in to being to standing for truth. There is a chance of hate being directed toward those who stand for truth, or those who stand for instance, the Constitution of our country. And so part of why our country is so fractured now is because there has been a lack of respect for the Constitution at the expense of being tolerant to people in society who are hurting other people. And so, in our neighborhood, there's a lot of churches, and there has been a fracturing of those churches, and maybe COVID accelerated that. I think it would have happened anyhow, and for one group of churches there, the call for tolerance, which they would use the word respect, for alternative lifestyles in their church, for just the moral corruption, has made a huge fight and a splintering away. So how do we and yet respect is very much a biblical command, and that's so I want to look into that this morning. Let's turn to Exodus 20. First of all, respect starts with how we relate to God. And if you are a Christian today, you're a follower of Jesus Christ, you're a servant. And we looked at the example of Paul this morning in our Sunday school lesson. And so when Paul was converted, he was following a way that wasn't a way. And it's just a challenge for me when he was exposed to truth, like he changed right away. He was ready to preach Christ. He was actually, I think, a little more ready to preach Christ than his brother were willing to accept him. And we can understand, I think, where they were coming from. But he proved himself well. So respect starts with how we relate to God. Let's turn to Exodus chapter 20. Appreciate also Brother Michael when he talked about understanding what the verses are saying. I was studying on that this morning. I studied on it the last time. And I really appreciate this passage. I want to read verses 3 through 7. I think I understand it. If I give you a wrong definition, I encourage you to talk to me afterwards and you can straighten me out. I'll start reading to verse 3. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. Thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image, nor any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. Thou shalt not bow down thyself to them, nor serve them. For I, the Lord thy God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children unto the third and fourth generation of them that hate me, and showing mercy unto thousands of them that love me and keep my commandments. So first of all, if we're going to relate to a group of people as believers, or really if it helps us a lot in our relations in the community, if we can relate to God with respect. And so what I'm looking at here is verse 3 says, thou shalt have no other gods before me. So God wants our loyalty. He wants us to be a servant. Look at the example of Paul. When he met Jesus on the way, he fell down. I like that point that was brought out. He fell down voluntarily and worshiped God. And then his life from then on showed that. So God says, thou shalt have no other gods before me. Verse 4, he says, thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image, nor any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. And I'll continue on. There's still the sentence going on. Thou shalt not bow down thyself to them, nor serve them. So as we relate, as we look at this, I don't think anybody here is tempted to have an image in a closet that we just pull out and just, it makes us feel good to talk to that image or bow down to that image. There's nothing, that isn't something we relate to just like that. But there is things in this passage that we relate to. So what about our possessions? What about our lifestyle? Do we want to put our life in a compartment to where, you know, we have some things that we do that we wouldn't say we live for, but they're precious enough too, and we really won't give them up. I'm not talking about family. It could be the amount of money we make, the amount of possessions we are accumulating. There's nothing wrong with possessions or money in their proper place. But God is telling children of Israel here, thou shalt have no other gods before me. So can we give an honest look at our life and say that Jesus Christ is what we're here for? That our goal in life is to serve Jesus. And if we have to start making excuses, and we're good at playing games if we want to go down that road, then that's the same, then God is talking to us the same way he was talking to the children of Israel. And we know that it was real to them. Their society around them had a big influence on them, because when they would go away from God, they would immediately go back. And we think of Solomon, if we look at his prayer at the dedication of the temple, and I think it's one of the most eloquent prayers in the Bible. He's just telling God that watch out for your people. If we do this, then help us come back this way. And yet, the Bible gives us where God talked to him because he was caught up in serving Molech, who was the god of child sacrifice. And so that just gives us a picture of why God was explaining it out to them here. Then he says, in the end of verse 5, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children unto the third and fourth generation of those that hate me. And I've always wondered, and I've heard people talking about generational sins, and I think we need to, as we look at this passage, I think we need to understand what God was saying here. And so in our respect to God, if we don't respect God, and so I'm going to talk to the men here, but it goes beyond that. It goes to you ladies too. If we are a church-going person, and if we keep everything that our brethren and sisters can observe the way it ought to be, and we should do that. I'm not throwing that out. But if that is our focus, then we're not respecting God. So especially starting down a road of disrespect, it is human nature to show respect where we can and be deceptive where we can't. And so what God was saying here was that's going to affect your children unto the third and fourth generation. And then I believe he says in verse 6, and showing mercy unto thousands of them that love me. God has never turned his back on anybody in any situation who has shown him love and has wanted to follow. But we praise God for people who have come out of backgrounds where God wasn't respected, where there was no respect shown for God. And praise God for that. And we have examples of the Bible. I think Rahab the harlot came from a situation where God was not, there was nothing to do with God. And yet there was something in her that when she had the opportunity, she helped the people of God, and she had enough faith in them that she approached them for what she could do for her family. And she was part of the kingly line as they went down. And that, so that shows the heart of God. And that's verse 6, showing mercy unto thousands of those that love me and keep my commandments. And so to start out, before we start talking about ourselves, I just wanted to look at this passage and see that if we can get it straight with God, then it sounds really simple to say we'll get it straight with our brothers and sisters. We're human too. That's why the rest of this subject is here. But in Deuteronomy, let's turn to Deuteronomy chapter 24. Verse 16, the fathers shall not be put to death for the children, neither shall the children be put to death for the fathers. Every man shall be put to death for his own sin. So he is saying, God was telling them that you stand on your own. Also in Ezekiel chapter 18, Ezekiel chapter 18, verse 19 says, yet say ye, why doth not the son bear the iniquity of the father? When the son hath done that which is lawful and upright, and hath kept all my statutes, and hath done them, he shall surely live. The soul that sinneth, it shall die. The son shall not bear the iniquity of the father, neither shall the father bear the iniquity of the son. The righteousness of the righteous shall be upon him, and the wickedness of the wicked shall be upon him. And that's the way God works. So it says in verse 6, and showing mercy unto thousands of them that love me and keep my commandments. And so let's, as a personal pledge, let's keep our life straight with God. Let's follow him, let's love him, and let's understand that there was the gift on Calvary, and that blood that was shed for our redemption was free, and that it was nothing that we could do to receive. It was a free gift. But as the result of that free gift and the love that was shown to us, then we are servants of God. And so it does cost us, it costs us our life, but it's a good life. Let's turn to Matthew chapter 25. Matthew chapter 25, verse 31. When the Son of Man shall come in his glory, and all the holy angels with him, then shall he sit upon the throne of his glory. And before him shall be gathered all nations, and shall separate one from another, as a shepherd divideth his sheep from the goats. And he shall set the sheep on his right hand, but the goats on the left. And he shall Then shall the king say unto them on his right hand, Come, you blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was an hungered, and ye gave me meat. I was thirsty, and ye gave me drink. I was a stranger, and ye took me in. Naked, and ye clothed me. I was sick, and ye visited me. I was in prison, and ye came unto me. Then shall the righteous answer him, saying, Lord, when saw we thee an hungered, and fed thee, or thirsty, and gave thee drink? When saw we thee a stranger, and took thee in, or naked, and clothed thee? Or when saw we thee sick, or in prison, and came unto thee? And the king shall answer and say unto them, Verily I say unto you, inasmuch as ye have done it unto one of the least of these my brethren, you have done it unto me. And what I want to get out of here is respect doesn't keep score. If we respect the people who respect us, then we're setting ourselves up to keep score. And you know, Jesus didn't keep score. If he just think of Jesus' life. If he would have kept score, how would he have forgiven the thief that was dying by his side? If he would have kept score, how would he have been able to accept the Apostle Paul when he changed? Because there was marks on Paul's past. I believe that Paul was at least guilty by association of Christians being killed. Certainly guilty because he was in on the arrests. He stood by as a witness when Stephen was stoned. And so God in his forgiveness does not keep score. And there's was interesting talking with a religious friend, just what I'll call him. He feels like if you are a Christian and then you fall away, that it was still stains from your past were dragging you down. Now, that's not biblical. But it's also not biblical that if you become a Christian, you can never fall away. And so if we have come to God and we have just got rid of that load of guilt, then that's past. But every day we need to choose to live for God. So these people here, they didn't realize what they had done, as Jesus says to him. But they were a good people who were respecting the ones around them, who were helpful, who shared their possessions, and did and acted as we say, and rightfully so, as Christians should. And then we think of the other group here, who he says, you know, when Jesus tells the ones he was calling the goats, you know, this is what you didn't do. And they said, well, when did we have the opportunity? I think there was people who they could have helped that were outside of their class. And it cost them on the judgment day. Let's turn to Daniel chapter 4. Verse 28. This is when Nebuchadnezzar was proud. When he was walking, he was enjoying what he had accomplished with his life. Verse 28 says, This all came upon King Nebuchadnezzar, and at the end of 12 months he walked in the palace of the kingdom of Babylon, and the king spake and said, Is this not great Babylon that I have built for the house of my kingdom by the might of my power and for the honor of my majesty? While the word was in the king's mouth, there fell a voice from heaven saying, O King Nebuchadnezzar, to thee it is spoken, thy kingdom is departed from thee. And they shall drive thee from men, and thy dwelling shall be with the beast of the field. and they shall make thee to eat grass as an oxen. And I'm just going to paraphrase it from here on, but can you imagine a king who had absolute power that where he was, and you know, if he decided somebody needed to die, somebody died. That was what he was used to. But he hadn't reckoned on God, and he hadn't respected God. So he goes on, you know, and it was the power of God that his enemies, whom he had many, didn't kill him while he was insane. He learned to live outside. He learned to live on grass. His reason wasn't there. Verse 36 says, at the same time, my reason returned unto me, for the glory of my kingdom, mine honor and brightness returned unto me. Verse 37 says, now Nebuchadnezzar, praise and extol and honor the King of heaven, all whose works are truth and his ways judgment, and those that walk in pride he is able to abase. So this is where, how he learned respect. Let's turn to Matthew chapter 7. I'll read the first five verses. It says, judge not that ye be not judged, for with what judgment ye judge, ye shall be judged, and with what measure ye mete, it shall be measured to you again. And why beholdest thou the mote that is in thy brother's eye, but considerest not the beam that is in thine own eye? Or how wilt thou say to thy brother, pull out the mote out of thine eye, and behold, a beam is in thy own eye? Thou hypocrite, first cast out the beam out of thine own eye, and then thou shalt see clearly to cast out the mote out of thy brother's eye. So this is talking about brotherhood relations. And it's looking at somebody, and you know that that was concerned about something little in a brother or a sister without being able to see that there was something big or wrong with them personally. And that clouds judgment. David, you know, when the prophet Nathan came to him after all his immoral conduct and after he was a murderer, when the prophet Nathan came to him and said, you know, this man in this city here, he took something from a poor man. He just took the last animal he had and offered it up when he had plenty of his own. And David just rose up in anger and said, that man's going to die. And the prophet said, you're the man. You know, this is you I'm talking about. And David immediately repented. It is for us on a personal level. It is easy to see what's wrong with the people around us and harder to see what's wrong with us. And Jesus' words were to all of us here. It's not like we're singling out anybody. It can be on the leadership level. It's just as hard. It's just as easy for us to get caught up in that. It can be on the family level with the dad. Anywhere in the different levels of authority that God has set up. It is very important that we stay straight with God on a personal level before we can be used. All right, let's look at 2 Kings chapter 2. And this is verse 23. So this one here is for maybe you children, but although I'm not accusing you of anything, but this story is for all of us, but also for the children. So the prophet here was going and he was mocked. I don't know how young these children were. Don't know what their ages were, but in 2 Kings 2, verse 23, and he went up from thence unto Bethel. As he was going up by the way, there came forth little children out of the city and mocked him and said unto him, go up, thou baldhead, go up, thou baldhead. And he turned back and looked on them and cursed them in the name of the Lord. And there came forth two she-bears out of the wood and tare 40 and two children of them. and he went from thence to Mount Carmel. There's a couple things here. This was a mob. This wasn't just five children. I don't know how many children were there, but the bear hurt 42 of them. So this was quite a group of children. So there is a lack of respect with young people to older people in society around us. And it really blesses my heart that I don't see that in our churches. And there's only one reason we don't see it in our churches, and that is because of vigilant parents. Because if you're not training your children, let's take it back a step. If you as a parent are undisciplined and you're not showing respect to God, then it's going to show in your life. One of the ways it's going to show in your life is your child training. And so as I see respectful children, there's parents doing a lot of work, because children just don't turn out respectful without training. Keep on. There's difference in children. And because a child is not respectful, I'll take it for granted that you're working on that, and they will turn out respectful if you keep training. Just because as a young person they turn their back on truth, if that's the choice they make, then at that point they're old enough to make a choice that their parents will be concerned about but are not in charge of. So show an example, lead by example. But this was an undisciplined mob here who were, I would say, chanting. They knew something about, they knew something about Elijah going up in the chariot, and so they were using that, I believe. And they also talked about his bald head. Let's look at 1 Samuel 24. And this was David in when he had the chance to kill Saul. 1 Samuel 24. Saul, as we understand Saul, he diverted a lot of people, a lot of soldiers who should have been guarding against the Philistines. But he was chasing David. They ended up in a cave. Verse 4, the men of David said unto him, Behold, the day which the Lord said unto thee, Behold, I will deliver thine enemy into thine hand. Thou mayest do it to him as thou seemest good unto thee. And so he was close. David cut off a piece of his garment. It repented him what he had done. Verse 8, David arose afterward and went out of the cave and cried after Saul, saying, My Lord the king. And when Saul looked on him, David stooped with his face to the earth and bowed himself. And David said to Saul, Wherefore hearest thou thy man's words? Behold, David seeketh thy hurt. So David showed him that he had shown Saul respect. Do you think that was easy for David? We know what kind of a man David was, and he was under God's blessing. He was a warrior from a young man. We think of him killing Goliath. It takes him, I don't know how many of you have read about the power of a lion and how they can, what they're capable of. But this was a young fellow that when there was a lamb gone, he killed a lion with a sword and a bear. And so David, I'm sure he was scared, but he never let fear get in the way of doing what he felt like he should do. And so we have this pattern, and yet he's here in the cave, and his men are encouraging him to go ahead and take care of this problem with Saul. And he, out of respect for the Lord's anointed, he didn't do that. Well, none of us are. none of us are in that situation. But what it is for us today is that I'm just challenging us, myself included, that we don't tear down another brother just because we have the opportunity to do it. If we do, if there is a problem, then it should be taken care of, but gossip should not be included in it. And so David showed us something there. In closing, let's turn to Acts chapter 23. So this was Paul after he was a Christian, talking to the same group of people who encouraged him to go after Christians. And I don't think he needed a lot of encouragement, but who were definitely involved in that with him. And Paul, earnestly beholding the council, said, "Men and brethren, I have lived in all good conscience before God unto this day." And the high priest Ananias commanded them that stood by him to smite him on the mouth. Then said Paul unto him, "God shall smite thee, thou whited wall, for sittest thou to judge me after the law, and commandest me to be smitten contrary to the law." And so they were really, what they really did here was nobody knew the law better than Paul. He says that he was a blameless Pharisee. And he also says that touching the law, he was blameless. Read how much is in the law, how many commands. And for Paul to say he was blameless, he understood what they could and couldn't do very well. And so they weren't supposed to smite somebody until there was they went through a process. And so he says, "Then said Paul unto him, God shall smite thee, thou white of wall, for sittest thou to judge me after the law." So they had brought him in to judge after the law, but they weren't following the way what the law had laid down. So they told him to, they said to smite him contrary to the law. And they that stood by said, "Revilest thou God's high priest?" Then Paul said, "I wist not, brethren, that he was the high priest, for it is written, thou shalt not speak evil of the ruler of thy people." And it took something, I believe, for Paul to just acknowledge that. Respect, part of respect is being able to say, "I'm sorry." Just being able to say, "I was wrong," and acknowledge that. Or we can go the other way and we can dig in and escalate it. And that doesn't have a good, ending. So as we relate to each other, as in our humanity, let's just make sure that we are treating the sacrifice for our salvation with respect. Let's kneel in prayer.